Now, before the next programme, a special announcement from our legal department. The BBC have been asked to refute the implication made in last week's Beachcomber programme that Lady Cab Stanley is to be floodlit. A letter received from her solicitors, Messrs. Robb, Steele, Pilfer, Pilfer, Robb and Steele, states, "Our client, though of generous build, can in no sense be said to constitute a public monument or other edifice or structure within or without the meaning of or by the Act." We are pleased to have been able to make this clear. We present Beachcomber by the Way, selections from the humour of J.B. Morton, with Richard Ingrams as the author.
Greetings, my public.
Interruptions from John Wells as Prodnose.
What is all this?
Be gone, you oaf.
And Patricia Routledge and John Sessions as several red-bearded dwarfs, amongst others. Beachcomber by the Way.
Hello, morons. This week I've received the following letter from a distressed young lady.
The other night I was at a big dinner party attended by several members of the diplomatic corps. The gentleman next to me had very large ears, and when he leaned towards me, the tip of his left ear caressed my cheek and made me giggle. I felt very foolish, especially as he mistook my laughter for genuine mirth and enjoyment, and began to flap the ear noisily. It was like the crack of a small whip, and the gust of air it set up untidied my hair. I heard an ambassador say, "That little lady can't carry her burgundy." I wanted to be angry, but could not stop giggling. What should I have done? P.S. I heard afterwards that he blew out all the candles with his ears after the ladies had withdrawn. He is some sort of attaché.
Yes, the African sort, by the sound of it. This is typical of the many letters I receive during the week, and all part of the price we pay for democracy, I suppose. Still, at least I'm able to propose a possible solution. A surprisingly effective ear restraint can be contrived from bicycle clips and a stout leather bag. The bag is brought down rapidly over the offender's head and the ears trapped in position with bicycle clips. This helps prevent chafing. The celebrated critic Ruskin was particularly fond of this solution and would spring into action at the slightest provocation. Once, after encapsulating the poor Mrs. Humphrey Ward, a noted ear flapper, for the third time in one evening, he was called upon to explain himself. "Well," replied the great man, "I bagged her to stop it. Ha, ha, ha."
Another cheap joke.
Cheap? How dare you? I pay a man 5 shillings a dozen for these. The stout leather bag used by Ruskin on this occasion may have been the very one celebrated now in song and story. But I doubt it.
You're not alone.
Silence, pest, or I soon will be. Oh, Ruskin had a little bag which people thought a menace, for every time he opened it out fell the stones of Venice. And there are others, of course. Lord Nelson had a little bag. Imagine his dilemma when Lady Nelson opened it and out popped Rally Emma. And again, oh, Dr. Johnson had a bag, and that great lexicographer was sure to find on opening it his tedious biographer. Ah, such art! And finally, my favourite, Rossetti had a little bag. He took it to the cleaner, forgetting that the bag contained the poetess Christina. The cleaner cried in accents loud, "But what about Christina?" To which Rossetti, beetle-browed, retorted sharply, "Cleaner!"
Waiter?
Yes, sir.
What's this rubber tire doing in my beef stew?
Sir, everywhere today the motor car is replacing the horse.
Ah.
And now on to pleasanter things. Following my recent account of the means employed by Wagwell's circus in an attempt to attract back its former star artiste, Miss Wackaway, now Mrs. Wretch, I have been pressed
by
to...
By whom?
By pressers, of course. People who press.
Press what?
I don't know. Wildflowers, probably. It's always their sort that make the most trouble. I have been pressed upon to describe her days of former glory and her courtship by and eventual marriage to the Colonel. A tail with more sawdust in it than Prodnose generates by shaving.
Meaning?
You're a wooden-headed fool. Now sit quiet, or I shall carve you into something more acceptable. Mm. Anyway, Mrs. Wretch, then Miss Wackaway, was the girl who stood on the elephant's back, and it was in this position that the Colonel first beheld his bride-to-be.
Gad, what a beautiful creature.
Thank you. She's an African. Well done, Africa.
No, no, my dear. I meant you.
Why? Sir, I...
The name's Wretch. Colonel Wretch. I'm a big game hunter, though I say it myself. There, let me help you walk.
And so, light as thistledown, Miss Wackaway first entered the Colonel's arms. He set her down, and with love and the merest speck of sawdust in his eyes, he proposed to her.
Miss Wackaway, I may only be an independently wealthy, ruggedly good-looking chap, with a large manor set in acres of rolling Ruston countryside.
Excuse me, Gov, but yes? The gypsy fiddlers are on next. Come on, you lot, break it up, you'll be late.
Miss Wackaway, will you marry me?
Oh, this is so sudden.
And she, having no prospects but a possible promotion on the death of the old woman who held the whiskey and soda for Gordon the Great Ape, accepted. The gallant colonel was to be seen in his seat at Wagwell's every night until...
And now, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, please give a big hand for Abba Beaker the Elephant.
Bravo!
Tonight...
Bravo!
Please.
Yes.
Tonight sadly appears without her normal mount. Abba Beaker!
Yeah. My sweet. What's happened to her? Quickly, let me through.
Oh, it's all right, dear. Calm down, I'm all right.
But I was so worried.
Yes, I know. But the girl who waltzes with the Siberian bear sprained her ankle, and I had to step into the breach.
My love, I do not think you should waltz with bears.
Yes, perhaps a more modern step would better suit today's audiences.
I mean, it is derogatory.
Any more so than standing on an elephant's back?
Sweet Blossom, an elephant is a noble beast. Not unconnected with Rogers, but the Siberian bear is an impossible outsider.
Hello, what's going on here, then?
Ah, Mr. Wagwell, this is Colonel Wretch, my fiancé.
Yes. Oh, so you're the josser that's going to rob us of our little sweetie-cums.
I beg your pardon?
Oh, we all call it that, ever since the day the lion tamer kissed her behind a beer barrel.
How dare you, sir?
Anthony, I...
My dear, remember that you are to be the chatelaine of Wretch Manor. I insist that you give up these low friendships.
I only kissed him because he threatened to put me in the barrel if I didn't. Honestly...
I do not wish to hear any more. Tomorrow you will ride your last elephant. The circus life is no longer for you.
Governor, you can't do it. This filly of yours has a future, but only if she sticks to her act. I never knew a married woman yet could put her whole heart into the elephant business. You're robbing her of a great chance, Gub. I don't mind telling you,
yes.
I had her marked down for the Egyptian queen to balance on top of a plaster pyramid with a serpent round her neck.
I'm sorry, but I have other more noble things in mind. Come, my dear.
Not a knife-throwing act, surely.
And so the next evening, Miss Wackaway left Wagwell's, and there was not a dry eye in the two and fourpennies when, standing on the elephant, she kissed her hands to the public for the last time. As she drove away with the colonel, she was overcome with emotion. On her lap sat Monty the Seal, a present from Wagwell himself.
My dear, the seal. I mean, do you quite think...
Oh, yes. I've got some fish for him in this paper bag. Dear Monte.
My dear, we can't really carry fish about with us when we're married, can we?
Oh, Arthur, you can't love me, or you wouldn't be so terribly unkind about Monty.
Nonsense, delightful Blossom. You come first, naturally.
And Monty second.
And Monty second.
Yeah, Monty. We all love you.
Whereupon the seal shoved its shiny snout into the colonel's coat pocket and bit his pipe in two. And so the day of their wedding arrived, Wagwell himself was asked to give the bride away on condition that he brought none of the circus animals and was made to understand that the lavish scale of the reception would render it unnecessary for him to carry the usual quart bottle in his coat pocket.
Congratulations, my dear. We won't forget you.
Nor are you, Mr. Wagwell.
Hey, excuse me, the photographs. How about one of the bride and seal?
After the marriage, Colonel and Mrs. Wretch settled at Wretch Manor, seat of the Rutland Wretches. There were a few difficulties in adjusting at first. On the opening meet of the season, the ex-circus queen caused a mild sensation by planting one leg on the back of her own mount and the other on that of her neighbour's, whereupon she stood erect, blowing kisses to Captain Screaming, the master of hounds. But such incidents became fewer with time. Soon after, the Colonel was asked to join an expedition to study the flora and fauna of the lower Woodley River. He accepted with alacrity, and Mrs. Wretch, the devoted wife, went with him. Away in this remote spot, her character mellowed. And on her return to Wretch Manor, nothing was left to remind her of her earlier life.
Ah, how pleasant it is, my dear. Just the two of us, relaxing here in front of this lovely fire.
Yes, Anthony, my darling. I'll ring for some drinks.
Splendid.
God damn it! Get it off me!
Nothing was left, except, of course, for Monty the Seal. And now some sporting news. Narkover School played its first cricket match of the season yesterday against Bloody, the Lowland Public School. Narkover's opening pair scored 486 between them and were not out when stumps were drawn, or rather smashed by the infuriated opposing team. The two umpires had been so heavily bribed and dosed with drink that one of them could not see straight, and the other shouted not out every time there was an appeal. Indeed, the Narkover crack player, Twister, was clean bowled 18 times, but on each occasion the umpire swore he had cried no ball. The other first wicket batsman, Fuzzer, was caught 4 times, stumped 7 times, run out 6 times, LBW'd 16 times, and hit his wicket 4 times, besides being twice cautioned for stopping a straight fastball with his hands.
But doesn't such behaviour worry the cricket authorities?
Indeed it does. If the Narkover boys continue to behave in this restrained, namby-pamby manner, none of them will ever qualify for a place in the current England team.
I should have expected such a remark from you.
Yes, I do manage to keep up a fairly high standard. Now, quiet oaf. The opening of the cricket season at Narkover coincides with Straight Bat Week, where good, honest Narkover men all over the land join together to sing the old school song.
When we sing for Narkover, in happy days gone by,
We present Cads and Swine,
a memory of early golden days at Narkover School.
Amen.
Narkover School. What a melodious name. What an historic institution. The great public school that has turned out so many of this country's statesmen.
I don't care if you are the Home Secretary. Get out and out. Stay out.
Well, can I remember that day when I first arrived, small and unprotected at the gates of Narkova. The words of greeting from my soon-to-be fellow pupils still ring sweet in my ears.
I tell you, chaps, here's the new kid. This time, better than little swine. You fellows keep him here while we fetch the stuff.
Tar and feathers. I was appalled by the prospect, but when they returned, there was a junior master with them. Saved.
I say, chaps, I don't really think you should be doing this, boys.
If you don't jolly well help us hold him down, sir, we'll tell you, Denbury, where to find those marked cards of yours.
Oh, I see, yes. Oh, well, where do we begin?
Into the coal cellar with him.
There it was, I passed my first night at Narkova. I was released early next morning by a monitor who had a grudge against the gang who had imprisoned me.
Never mind the thanks. Hand over your pocket money. Yeah, right. And I'll take an IOU for 20 liquor as well. Come on. Or perhaps you like it down there.
No.
At Narkova, one learned fast. It didn't take me long to settle down, and I soon discovered which masters were easy to bribe, which boys were willing to act as fences, and how to make use of a few clever methods of cheating at cards. I even did well at sports. While still in my first year, I was lucky enough to be one of the fags chosen to collect the various bribes, paid in advance, for the annual Narkova-Pilhampton football game. Now people protest about the fagging system, but in all my 4 years I can only recall 11 deaths from fagging, and in one of those cases the fag brought it on himself by kicking a prefect during a game of bridge in the school chapel. However, on the day, the great football match started badly for Narkova.
This is disastrous. 10 minutes into the game, and those Pilhampton bribes still haven't come through. Can't you trust anyone nowadays?
Narkova scraped through by 2-1. Fortunately, our captain's father, very wealthy man, managed to conceal a big check in one of the lemons served at half-time. A Pilhampton man found it, and they all slacked for the rest of the game. I don't know.
Remember, boys, it's not the winning that counts, but the taking of bribes.
And so passed my time at Narkova. At the beginning of my fourth and last year, I was made a prefect, and consequently found myself comparatively well off financially. Finally, my last days arrived, and we received a moving farewell address from dear old Smart Aleck, our headmaster.
Some of you may have cheated at cards. Well, we've all done that. Some of you may have forged a friend's name to a check or lied to get him into trouble. Ah, but that was only your baser self. Above these stratum of villainy is the pure gold of a Narkovarian, unalloyed, essayed in the lines of comradeship, on field and in the classroom.
Noble words. And as he spoke, I turned to see a fellow prefect quietly rifling the note case of the boy next to him, his eyes filled with tears, for he too was leaving that term.
Boys, say men, the whole world is now your cricket. Go forth and score bread. Your names are engraved on the great heart of Narkova.
Though I know for certain that some of them are only aliases.
Goodness, what an irritating noise.
True. Why don't you shut up and stop making it?
I was referring to the sound of that typewriter.
I know you were, but I wasn't.
Anyway, what are you writing? Not more entries in that dictionary for today?
Yes, congratulations. For that, you shall get to hear the very latest.
Oh, dear.
Caustic. Adjective applied to the wit of magistrates and judges, as in the sentence, the judge then asked who was this gentleman Mussolini who appeared to be an Italian. Cheers, deafening, an ovation given under compulsion by schoolchildren to anyone for whom the traffic is disorganized.
Piffle.
Clean up, a system employed by the police to get rid of undesirable nightclubs. The clubs are closed and may only be opened again under new names.
Yes, yes.
Clue. What the police find when they fail to arrest a criminal.
Oh, I'm giving.
Conquest. A noun used to describe man's degree of control over some element which he can never hope to control, such as the sea or the air.
You win.
Courtesy. True courtesy belongs to one who addresses an inferior in a hearty manner, hinting that he too is, in spite of appearances, a human being. Culture. Anybody who learns a number of facts by heart, either from a book or at a course of lectures, is said to have acquired culture. That's it. You may open your eyes now.
Oh, thank goodness, Owly. Nothing but mere prejudice.
What do you mean, mere? This is prejudice, good and proper. Begone, milksop. That's the only kick he'll ever get from good literature. Time for a little poem, I think. My little parrot, Dirty Dick, one cold and rainy day fell sick and slowly turned a deep magenta. I took him to the Pets Health Centre. A state vet in his breezy way said, well, and how are we today? Let's see, pulse normal. That's fine. Now take a breath, say 99. But Dirty Dick, his patience spent, said something vastly different.
There you go, sir.
Thank you.
That's the finest parrot in the place.
Oh, I'm sure it is, yes.
A great talker.
Oh, absolutely.
You'll learn anything you teach her.
Oh, yes, we're right. Goodbye.
Bye now. Well, I am surprised to see you back here, sir. What's wrong with the bird?
Damned things. Stutters.
I have been reading about a ladder maker who, at the age of 104, has become a travelling salesman and has set out to make people ladder conscious. One method employed by go-ahead salesmen is to lean a ladder against a house, climb it, and cry jovially through any window that happens to be open, any ladders today? This makes the inhabitants of the house conscious of ladders in no time.
I fail to see where any of this ladder talk is leading us.
Ah, then you are unacquainted with the case of Rincewind versus Milton.
Home news now. The hearing began yesterday before Mr. Justice Cocklecarrot, with full jury, of the case in which a Mr. Chum Rincewind, a red-bearded dwarf about town, seeks to recover damages from Miss Juliet Milton, an actress, for injuries sustained to his wrist during a fracas at the Seaview boarding house. Apparently, Mr. Rincewind fell from the top of a small ladder which he had placed against Miss Milton with the intention of kissing her ear. Mr. Tinkleberry Snapdriver is acting for the defence, and Mr. Graham Gooseboot for the prosecution.
Tell me to put it in mustard water.
Mr. Gooseboot, your witness?
You are Hermione Webcross, proprietress of the boarding house known as Sea View.
I object, my lord.
What, to the boarding house? silent.
Card.
It is not known as Sea View. It is Sea View.
In Chelsea. And what sea, may one ask, does it view? The Pacific?
Well, properly speaking, there's no view of the sea, as we overlook Dempton and Mackworth cycle accessories. But the name handed down by my late mother, Clara Webcross, is Sea View.
Very well. Then how do you explain the fact that one of your boarders, a lady, was kissed on the ear from the top rung of a small ladder in broad daylight?
It was the exception that proves the rule. It might happen to anyone.
Even judges?
Silence. In the music hall.
Silence.
Funny, isn't it?
Silence. Mrs. Webcross, have you anything at all useful to tell us?
Yes. An old felt hat makes a rather nice nest for a badger.
Oh, dear. Call Miss Juliet Milton. Perhaps she will be able to enlighten us.
Miss Milton, I suggest that you yourself help place the ladder up which your assailant climbed.
I can get plenty of kissing without having to act as a sort of builder's mate, thank you.
Old face, Damozel.
Silence.
No doubt, no doubt. But did you in any way extend your ear to make the dwarf's pleasant task easier?
I'm an actress, not a contortionist. I can't move my ears at will.
They're all comedians, aren't they?
Silence. Mr. Snapdriver, may we see this ladder?
Certainly, my lord. It's here.
I wonder if I might experiment with the ladder and the lady's ear.
Go ahead, Mr. Gooseboot. I'm sure the whole court envies you.
Thank you, my lad.
My worst thing, I am Jack.
Yes, Mr. Rincewind.
Why should the learned counsel be allowed to do with impunity what I am being prosecuted for doing without impunity?
It is in the interest of justice.
Not entirely, I hope.
No, of course not. Not entirely. There is naturally a human element involved.
That element, Mr. Gooseboot, must be strongly controlled in a court of law.
But this isn't fair. In every reconstruction of a crime that I can remember, it was the accused who was given the leading part.
There is no question of a crime in this case. It is no crime to fondle such an ear.
Then why am I here?
To claim damages, you fool, for a sprained wrist.
What are you calling a fool?
That's what you're paying me for.
If I'm paying for this trial, then can I give evidence now?
Oh, very well. Fetch a box for the little fellow.
Now, Mr. Rincewind.
Sir, yours to command.
Please, Mr. Rincewind, do not speak until you are questioned.
Mr. Rincewind, if, as you allege, a display of affection took place, how do you account for the fact that you fell from the ladder without Miss Moulton pushing you?
Emotion, sir. It's difficult to balance on a ladder while indulging in dalliance and gallantry, as you probably know.
And the experience has not yet come my way.
Live in hope, Cally. Live in hope.
Indeed. But if Mr. Gooseboot is to speak with any authority on this matter, maybe he should resume his experiment.
Thank you, my lad.
Perhaps it might be time to recall Miss Milton.
Who can forget her, mate? Who can forget her?
Miss Milton, once and for all, did you encourage Mr. Rincewind's advances?
Certainly not. He's so small I didn't see him until he kissed me.
You asked me to believe you didn't notice you had a ladder leading against you?
Of course I noticed it.
Oh, then why did you leave it there?
I thought it might be someone else coming up.
Silence!
I really don't think these
people... Oh, now look what's happened. Court adjourned until my bench is fixed. Now, as it seems quite impossible to conduct in a normal manner any case which involves red-bearded dwarfs, and all of them, it appears, do, I suppose I may as well make some kind of summing up. If the jury think that Mr. Rincewind was pushed, they will consider his claim for damage reasonable. However, if they are satisfied that he fell, then their duty is clear. Mrs. Webcross has assured us that ladder gallantry is no part of the everyday life at Sea View. Yet, Miss Milton expressed no surprise when she felt the ladder against her body, nor when she saw this little gentleman's moon face gazing up at her. This is puzzling, and I am bound to add that the two learned counsel have merely confused the issue by their prodigious display of idiocy and incompetence. I will end on that note. It is for the jury to make what they can of all this.
Oh, and what did they make?
2 guineas and 8 pence on the outcome. One of the jurors was a knockover man.
I mean, what was the result?
Oh, steps were taken so that it could never happen again. Ha, ha, ha.
Is that meant to be funny?
Not to insects, no. Be gone, beetle. Ooh! Goodbye.
That was Beachcomber, by the way. Adapted for radio by Michael Barfield, with Richard Ingrams, who appeared as Beachcomber. Patricia Routledge, John Sessions, and John Wells played the other characters. Their announcer was Perkins, and the producer was Thompson. And now some late shipping news. Lady Cab Stanley was blown 2 miles out of her course yesterday.